words, AI is far more dangerous than nukes.
Right now, in real time, we're all seeing the crazy growth of artificial intelligence. Elon Musk early on began warning about this and that it is now inevitable that AI could and will at some point take over humanity. It's for this reason and main concern as well for others that he started a company called Neuralink in 2016. It's the potential ability to create a direct connection between the human brain and computers. If you can't beat them, you better join them.
Most everyone over time will develop brain and spine problems. These can all be solved with an implantable neural link. The neurons are like wiring, and you need an electronic thing to solve an electronic problem.
The Neuralink device is about an inch in diameter and has a battery and a Bluetooth and an inductive charger. It would be implanted in your skull. The electrodes are very carefully inserted with a robot that we developed, very carefully avoiding any veins or arteries. And then you stitch it up and you wouldn't even know that somebody has it. It can interface basically anywhere in your brain.
You can solve a very wide range of brain injuries.
In this video, we'll be speaking to an expert who follows the Neuralink company closely to give us a summary of the current state of the company and its progress. Can this technology help us humans eventually control AI? Which diseases or conditions might Neuralink help? Can this give us powers to wirelessly control computers and our environment? How might Neuralink help other Musk companies like Tesla, not just in cars but robots and energy, or SpaceX as humans travel to Mars? Neuralink is working on creating a very small device that can be put into a person's brain with minimal surgery, also called implantable brain-machine interfaces, BMIs. The technology developed by Neuralink is based on tiny threads that are thinner than a human hair and can be implanted into the brain. These threads are then connected to a small implant called a Neuralink that communicates wirelessly with external devices such as computers or smartphones. But here's the coolest part. Neuralink has been testing this technology in animals, and they've already shown that they can use it to control a rat's movements with a computer. Here's a monkey playing the game of Pong using just his mind. Just imagine being able to control a computer, a phone, or even a car with your thoughts. That's the kind of stuff we used to only see in sci-fi movies, but now it's becoming a reality. But the potential for this technology goes beyond just controlling computers. Imagine if someone with a disability like paralysis or ALS could use Neuralink to control their body again. That's the kind of thing that could change lives. In the future, the tech can possibly create a way for people to talk to computers and download information directly into their brains. So today, we're in for a real treat. We've got Ryan Tanaka joining us. Thank you, Ryan. Really appreciate you joining us and telling us more about Neuralink.
Yeah, my pleasure. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you, Ryan. So Ryan has a successful YouTube channel called Neuropod that covers all things Neuralink. It's arguably the de facto media site covering Neuralink. He has over 60,000 subscribers and does an amazing job keeping abreast of the latest updates. With a degree in engineering, he has interned at Tesla and other major companies. He is founder of another startup called Returns, which believes that traditional retirement is an outdated concept that no longer makes sense in the context of our developed society. He's building Returns to help people who are retired to continue to consult for businesses. Ryan, might you help me and my audience get brighter? Or will I need a Neuralink to do that?
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Okay, so let's get started. So Ryan, you had attended a Neuralink event. I'm just curious, what is the biggest takeaways that you got from there? What is the big points that we should really know right away about what Neuralink all means?
Sure. So there are three main things. One of them is that I realized that Neuralink is really wanting this to be available for everybody. Like, they're designing and architecting the device so that every human on the planet could eventually have an implanted brain chip. And so there's a couple of other things that I took away. One of the things is that the employees are extremely high caliber. Like, the credentials and accomplishments that they've had, their passion for the mission of Neuralink to help solve important brain and spinal cord injuries was also very strongly felt. And so just being among the group of people that are all incredibly motivated by that mission and all extremely capable and like very complementary of one another, that was really fun to be a part of. And it gave me additional confirmation that, okay, if there's any team that's going to be able to build this type of advanced technology and this type of device, it's going to be the Neuralink team.
Question for you then is, do you think that the main driver for the company, the employees, as you just said, is it to solve medical conditions, or is it this big giant mission that Elon believes that if you don't put, you know, this connection ability for humans to connect with computers and to connect with AI, to control AI, otherwise we will be just pawns in AI's, you know, controlling humanity at this point. Is that the main driver for everyone, or just Elon? And currently today it's about, you know, solving diseases.
I would say it's primarily the medical applications are the primary motivation for most of the employees today. I think they're cognizant of this longer term goal. In my view, it's quite similar to how Tesla was in 2015. It's somewhat similar to that, because in 2016, I believe, was the year that Tesla changed their mission statement from accelerating the advent of sustainable transportation to accelerating the advent of sustainable energy. And that was like shortly after the acquisition of SolarCity. And so like basically during that time in 2015 and part of 2016, everybody knew that there's this larger picture here. Like, it's not just trying to transition the world to sustainable transportation. Instead, like, there's this larger play, and the acquisition of SolarCity was kind of the first public step to show that, major public step to show that. And so with Neuralink, like, it's kind of the same. Everybody knows that there's this current goal of trying to help solve debilitating brain and spinal cord injuries, and probably 10 to maybe 20 years down the road, they'll shift more of their focus to this AI risk mitigation.
Okay, that makes a ton of sense. So why don't we start with, what is Neuralink? What is their progress? Where they're at? I've been hearing that they're delayed, and yet I've also heard that there's actually a giant headquarters building that was already built, and they're well-funded. So where are they? Are they really far behind, or kind of like they've already made huge movements and progress that, you know, the world is their oyster and things are starting to happen?
It's kind of a mix. So right now the company is around 300 employees. So it's still very small, particularly when you compare it to like SpaceX or Tesla. I think SpaceX has around 10,000 and Tesla has like 100, and I don't know, they have almost 200,000 probably. So yeah, with Neuralink having 300 employees, they're wanting to make sure that they're like they've made the correct architectural decisions, and then just making sure that every additional hire that they hire or that they bring on the team is lifting up the capabilities of the rest of the team. They do have a presence in Austin. However, I wouldn't say it's a super large presence at the moment. Their headquarters is in Fremont, California, pretty close to the Tesla factory. So they have their main headquarters in Fremont, California. They have another building very close to that headquarters in Fremont. And then they have a few buildings in Austin. And it wouldn't surprise me if, like all of Elon's other companies, they eventually establish more of a presence in Austin.
Yeah. Okay. Why don't you tell me, what have they accomplished so far? What's the technology that they've received, and where are they at?
Yeah, so they're working on building, like you said, a brain-machine interface, which is basically a way to read the electrical signals that are being fired from neurons in the brain to one another. And if you can take that electric signal, particularly like the voltage spike that occurs, then you can get a sense of what activity correlates to specific movements or thoughts in the brain. This type of thing has been done before, but it's never been done with this much precision and with this much scale in mind. And so that's probably the thing that is most remarkable about what Neuralink has done, is during their monkey mind pong demonstration, they showed that they implanted two Neuralinks, one on both sides of motor cortex for the monkey. And they were able to determine, like just from those chips in the brain, what the monkey wanted to do, like what where they wanted to move the cursor, and then use that information, send it wirelessly to the actual controller, and then, or to the computer, and then have that occur on screen, despite that there being no physical controller being moved. You know, historically, like there's been devices like the Utah Ray or Deep Brain Stimulator. The Deep Brain Stimulator, for example, has like one or two electrodes, and it's just not, it's quite useful for Parkinson's patients with relieving tremors, but it's certainly nowhere near what an advanced Neuralink would be able to help with. A Utah Ray has also been quite helpful and useful for patients. Those devices typically have around 100 electrodes, sometimes like 500 electrodes. Neuralink, in their latest version, they said that they have 4,000 electrodes. And if you have four on a given device or on a chip, they could do 16,000. So you can quickly get a sense of how much more information that is being read from the brain. And eventually they want to do the opposite direction too. They don't want to just be able to see what information is coming out of the brain. They want to be able to input information back into the brain. And the way to do that is basically like firing electric signals into a specific part of the cortex or other brain regions to stimulate what would occur if there was an actual neuron doing that firing.
Literally blowing my mind. I want to come back to that because that is such a big deal, the information download into your own brain. But let's just start with the basics, right? So this is the ability for them to insert these threads into your brain. You said 4,000, maybe times four, 16,000 neurons, tiny threads. But they've created the machine that apparently, what is it, the size of the hole that they're going to put in your skull? Is it like a quarter? Is it a dime?
Mm-hmm. It's around the size of a quarter.
Okay.
Yeah.
But they did it safely. They can repackage your back again so that your skull is still full. And yet they're going to connect to all the neurons. And then I saw the computer system that they do that can make sure that that doesn't, it's a needle, right? Like it's a sewing into your head. But make sure it doesn't hit any blood vessels, neurons. It's not going to cause any issues. How confident are you with that technology to the level that they've already built it today? Are they pretty well done deal? This works. It's proven.
It certainly works. It certainly works. However, there are like little things that could certainly be better. So for example, anytime that you cut open the brain, like particularly the brain is very sensitive to infection. And so like the shorter the duration that there's an opening, the less likelihood that it's going to be severely infected. Also, like the fewer layers that you cut into the brain, the better. But then also, oftentimes, like if you have any sort of external device put into the body reacts really aggressively. And so, like to minimize that immune response, Neuralink has developed the needle and the specific threads that are reading the electric signals in the brain they've made it so small that the brain basically doesn't know that it's there. And so if the brain doesn't know, or the brain and the body doesn't know that it's there, there's no reason for it to attack it. And therefore, there's, in theory, going to be less degradation over time with what signals you're able to read. But this is a very, very, you know, challenging material science problem, because the brain is fluid. I've been told the brain texture is similar to Jell-O, but then you're also wanting this device to be able to stay in the same place enough where a human is able to walk around, you know, do their daily activities, go hiking with this device in their head, while also, like, you know, so it's basically has to stay in the same place, but be flexible enough to move around with the brain while still getting the correct signals. And so optimizing those things and making sure that it's very safe still have quite a bit of time to go. Like, they are planning to do human trials later this year. They've sent in their application to the FDA. And I think, I'm personally optimistic and believe that they will do human trials later this year. In prior years, when Elon has said that that's going to be the case, I didn't think that that was going to happen. But I do think it's going to happen before the end of this year.
Yeah. And the reason why I agree with you, because these are medically necessary. You're solving some major issues that people have and conditions and diseases that they have. And this is not the first time. There's lots of other humans that have had big, giant things because it's such a medical condition that they have. But tell me, like, the steps that they've had to do to get here, right? So they've done mice, they've done pigs, and now monkeys. And so, you know, tell me the pros and cons. Like, what have they, milestones that they've achieved, but also I do want to address as well concerns about animal activists. Is it true that many of these monkeys are dying? You know, how do we know that they're not dying because of this technology? Or is it just normal? It's, you know, part and parcel of research that is happening every day.
Sure. Well, so at the beginning, they were wanting to test this just as much as they can in the lab, right? Like, no animal models, and trying to optimize the architecture. So, like, for example, in the intro that you did, they've actually changed the architecture from now. It's no longer behind the ear. It's actually, like, in the skull.
Okay.
And yeah. And the initial demonstrations have been in motor cortex specifically. So they just, like, you basically go like ice fishing. You, like, cut out a piece of this, you shave off the hair in that area, cut out a piece of the skull, have the robot place these very, very tiny threads that have, like, electric probes on them. They're called electrodes. And then you stick that into the brain tissue, and those probes are able to, like, read the electric signals. After that's placed, then you put the quarter size chip enclosure into where the skull was, and then seal over the skin, and eventually the hair grows back. And that, so that's pretty much in principle, like, why it's so amazingly, the fact that they're aspiring to do these things is fantastic, because, like, all of the former similar devices were either you have, like, an external box that sits up above the head and then the person can never move from that spot, or you have, like, a wearable headset that requires, like, the addition of saline solution, and you're trying to read electrical signals through the skull. You can imagine how difficult that would be. That's the analogy that often gets compared to, is basically, like, if somebody was trying to learn what was happening on the inside of a football stadium and you had a microphone outside of the stadium, it would be really difficult to get a sense of what's going on inside. But if you went inside the stadium and you dropped a thousand microphones right next to every seat, then you could get a really good sense of what's going on. And that's very much in principle what Neuralink is trying to do. As far as like the usage of animal models, they started with rats. They moved to pigs. Now they have monkeys and sheep. And in one of the coolest things that I'm super inspired by with what Neuralink is going to work on is helping paralyzed people regain mobility. And in the latest Neuralink update in November, they showed that they've implanted a Neuralink both in the brain area of the pig and also the spinal cord area of the pig. And you can just like read what signals are being sent from the brain to the spinal cord and then stimulate that area to then generate movement in the pig. And, you know, basically in principle, a lot of the people who are paralyzed, there's simply a damaged connection between their brain and the spinal cord. So the information that the brain is wanting to send to the spinal cord to then stimulate movement, it's just not getting there. But the message is being sent, it's just not being received. And so if you can wirelessly bridge that connection by having a Neuralink in the brain reading what signals are being sent, receiving down in the spinal cord what signals were trying to be sent, and then use that to stimulate the muscle, it's like you enable a paralyzed person to eventually regain their walking ability. And because the brain is neuroplastic and also the digital system that Neuralink is working with can also change, then eventually they're training each other and the person will be able to walk pretty well. You're going to have to remind me some of the questions that you asked because
It's getting so exciting at this point. But before we just, I want to understand how this actually works for paralyzed people. But I do think we need to address the animal conditions.
Sure.
And can you tell us what Tesla's doing? Because it's a worthy cause, right? You're helping people with their major conditions. And animal testing has been done, is being done everywhere. But, you know, there is this, you know, there's a backlash against Neuralink about how, right, you're killing monkeys, animals, pigs. Tell me what, just address that issue just to make sure we understand.
Sure. So the primary concerns that arose in 2021 were from the Physicians Committee for Responsible Medicine. And that group opposes the use of any animal models at all. And so a lot of their claims were like, hey, this shouldn't be happening. They're being mistreated. Animals are dying. And this is terrible because you shouldn't use animals. There's certainly like an ethical and moral debate of whether or not that should be the case. Like, to me, that's where like there's an actual debate to be had. However, assuming that somebody is okay with some usage of animals, then it should be like, how do you optimize the use of those animals and make sure that they're treated as humanely as possible and use the animals who are already like not doing well or they like, for example, with Neuralink, in their response to that report from the PCRM, they said that many of the animals that they received, those animals, the plan was already to euthanize them after having one anesthetic event. Additionally, they also received some animals that were already dead. So, you know, if you're doing testing on a very unhealthy monkey, then it's like if you give it one anesthetic event, you get the data that you're wanting, then okay, euthanization occurs as planned. Also in that report that Neuralink released, they said that they have the best animal facilities, far greater than all of the standards and regulations require. So nice. Like whether that be the physical space available to the animals, the food that's fed to the animals, the way that they encourage animals to engage in the training or engage in the charging or the variety of tasks, like it's significantly better of a situation at Neuralink than other places. And it's unfortunate that, you know, because Elon has so much exposure, that their standards need to be higher. And even if they're higher, like people still will give them a lot of flack for anything that they do.
Okay. Thank you for addressing that very well, very comprehensive. That's what I was looking for, just to make sure we understand. Now, the medical potentials, this is the exciting part. So you talked about paralysis and that it's not just a brain implant, but even beyond another implant that's past the spinal cord, and it can actually control muscle movements. So can these animals at this point move like a normal walk, or is it just more like, you know, a nerve vault and then there's a movement, or is it really this ability to really then control it with fine motor control?
There's not fine motor control right now. But in the demonstration, they showed that, like, for example, one of the hind legs of a pig could flex one direction or extend fully in another direction, just based on the stimulation that it was receiving. And so, you know, that's just to demonstrate that in principle, this is possible.
Yeah.
However, like at the moment, the goal is to help those paralyzed patients right now with just being able to regain control of a computer keyboard and mouse. And so that would require the much simpler thing where you're just implanting a Neuralink in the motor cortex area of a human, and then like using that information to correlate to what the person would want to type or where they would want to move their mouse. That's quite simple. And they've demonstrated that multiple times with a monkey being able to do that.
So that's the first clinical trial, is paralyzed humans to be able to control a computer, control mouse, and then read and be able to type. It's exciting. So tell me about that. When is that clinical trial? You said it's coming up very soon, right? You think that maybe even this year?
Yeah, I think it's going to be later this year. Another one of the initial indications that they're working on is allowing visually impaired people to to see like a certain amount. It's not with like a ton of clarity, but you know, as you add more electrodes, in theory, you can get more data, and the person could eventually like see quite a bit. I think they're aspiring to get it where like a blind person could fully see again. It's just like remarkably inspiring to me that this is the case.
That one is mind blowing, of course. So this is a camera, I guess. Is that a camera that's looking out, and then it's going to translate to electrical stimulus, and then it's going to go right into the nerves of the optical, and then it's going to assume that it's seeing what the camera's seeing. Is that what this is? Or
I believe this first one is just implanting in the visual cortex and allowing the person to basically like recreate what a person would see.
Sorry, explain. Their eyes are working.
Right. That's my understanding of it. Yeah.
And then they just like connect the eye nerves with the visual cortex nerves, and then let them something like that? Or that's interesting. Okay.
That's my current understanding of it. I think eventually they're going to get to a point where, like, the person doesn't even need to see, and they're just literally giving the information to the person for what they would see. But that's kind of later down the road. Yeah,
that's later. Okay, so the medical potential you talked about is paralysis, ALS. You talked about visual impairments. What other potential for Neuralink that they're going to work on and has promise for?
Things like depression, morbid obesity, hearing loss, tinnitus, dementia. Just like a wide variety of different things. Maybe later you're going to ask me about Tesla, but I'm just super inspired by Neuralink's mission to help these people.
No, for sure. That's a very worthy goal. I mean, that is why we're all doing what we're doing, and it's worthy to do this, but it's just mind-blowing just that this technology even works. And that's just the beginning, right? The medical potential. What about let's talk about the technological potential for Neuralink. What are the things that you can do with this? How does it relate with Tesla? What are the ways that you can actually see them? Because, you know, many times Elon's companies, they share technology with each other. Is this too much to think about right now? Or is it, like, you know, they're going to take years? Is it going to take decades for them to do medical and then move on? Or is it something that could happen sooner?
I do think that it's going to take at least a decade, probably two decades before they're really like trying to get this for wide release for people who do not have a medical use for it. So, like, for example, the video game player today who's wanting to use a Neuralink to be able to like optimally play video games with zero latency. I think that's going to be, it's going to take a long time before we get there, as it probably should, right? Like, I personally would like them to prioritize helping people who severely need this, and could have their life like completely turned around because of having one. In fact, like, I guess one of the things with the technology in particular is that, like, I was never super into the idea of getting brain chips implanted, but if somebody says like, somebody does not remember who their kid is, you know, and they've been that way for a year, then for all intents and purposes, like, that person is like brain dead, and therefore they're pretty much dead. But if you are able to get them to like know the names of their kids, recognize what's happened in their life, and communicate in a normal way, that's like the closest thing you get to somebody being reborn. Like, they literally have their life, they have new life. And not only them, but also the people really close to them and their friends and family. So, like, the depth of impact that Neuralink will have is just remarkable. As far as the longer term technology, with regards to like AI and minimizing the risk associated with AI, I think there's so many uses that will occur, because it's similar to like what happened when we first had the internet. People didn't really know what applications would occur afterwards. But there was so much that was enabled because of it existing and the wide availability of it. And we're kind of seeing like the second wave of it with Starlink being available to more people. Like, the people who did not have internet consistently, and now they have Starlink, they're able to do so much more than they were before. And I think similar will happen with Neuralink, because, like, literally the transferring of information to and from the person to their digital device becomes like practically zero. It practically becomes instantaneous. So, you know, if that's able to happen, it's like, imagine having like GPT-10 with Neuralink version 10.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, like, you literally don't have to type anything. You don't have to do anything. You just think it. And GPT-10 gives it back directly to what you're wanting. And you don't even have to say it to somebody else to transfer that information again. So, like, I mean, I think it's really just going to unlock like another level of people's efficiency and productivity.
Yeah. So, you know, Elon has talked about how right now, when you control a smartphone, we're all already connected to a computer, which is we're always carrying our smartphone around. But in order to use a smartphone, you use your fingers and you're typing away. And that is very slow to take your thought, communicate it to people, and then send it to you. And then you read it, then you need to type back something back to me. And then, so the part that I can see happening very easily is the ability for, you know, the brain neurons firing to then control a computer. That is already mind-blowing, absolutely. But I can see how that would work, that I can say, I want this cursor to move, and I'm making it move, so it's my control. And I'm really excited to the day when I can just look at a light and turn it on, right? I can look at the TV, change a channel, just by, you know, firing the neurons. The part that I just don't understand is the actual download. So you're saying, as an example, if I sent a query to GPT-4, and I understand too, by the way, that I've heard that you can also, like, you don't have to just think the letters. The computer can actually already understand the word that you're saying. But the download part, that's really, I guess it's, but it is what's happened. Like, is that how I gain my knowledge somehow? Or is it like, it's electrical neurons firing to feed me a memory, to feed me an image, to feed me some knowledge? That part I don't get.
Okay. This is good that you're asking these great questions, because it's really difficult for me to like go back to like thinking that I'm explaining this to somebody or an audience that like may not understand anything about Neuralink. So I'm trying to get back to the basics. So basically, like, having the current brain to computer interface is basically our thumbs. When we're wanting to give our computers input or give our mobile phones input, our input is like from our brain to our thumbs. And then we're just like typing really slowly. No matter how fast we type, like, it's super freaking slow. And then the computer is then taking that information and it'll do the Google search or it'll run ChatGPT. But that transfer of information is called bandwidth. And that bandwidth is super low. And then when we're receiving information back from the computer, we get that in the form of visual and audio information. So, you know, when we watch a YouTube video, like, we're getting quite a bit of information, like literally quite of bits of information. And that's pretty good. But compared to what an advanced Neuralink would be, it's still super slow. Elon often compares this to like the connection between the computer and the human is like a straw, but with an advanced Neuralink, you want to make that a super highway. And that's, I think, in orders of magnitude, that's approximately how much faster and better it would be. Also, I guess on the input side, people will oftentimes type with their thumbs, but they could increase the speed quite a bit with voice, right? So like, if I want to do a Google search and I say like, what's the most common koala in Australia or whatever, then if I voice that, it's way faster, and it's still not going to be as fast as the Neuralink. So then with regards to the like downloading of information, like, instead of just having to watch the YouTube video, you could like watch it at 2x speed, then you're getting double the information. And then with a Neuralink, like you could just literally get the things that the video would have caused your brain to do. You just like have all those and just like do them. It just occurs in your brain. You just fire those specific neurons. And then you basically have that information. So to me, the better way to conceptualize this right now is that it's unlikely to be truly like downloading. It's more just that you would have almost instantaneous access to the cloud at all times. You could download some things, but it's like, it's probably better to just think of it as instant access to everything available that's out there. And if you had everything available that was out there, then you could pretty much know another language. Like right now, if I want to speak in Chinese to somebody and I have no knowledge of Chinese, I could use Google Translate, but the limiter is how quickly I can send what I'm wanting to the phone and how slowly it sends it back to me. And then I have to process it and then send that to somebody else. But instead, in the future, like with an advanced Neuralink, you could literally just think what you're wanting to say in English. It very rapidly, instantaneously sends that to Google or whatever, you know, replacement you want there. And then that translates instantaneously, sends it back instantaneously. And you may not even have to like send it to another person. It could be just like brain to brain directly.
Yeah, that part is weird. So if you have a Neuralink in your net, and I do as well, we can talk to each other through our thoughts. I could think of something.
Yeah.
You maybe even my emotions, right? You'd actually know my emotions. We would be melded into one person. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that will be possible. I mean, it's almost like I heard this on a podcast the other day. It's almost like if you had two people were basically like drops in the ocean. Like they're different, but they're the same. And I think that's kind of what's happened with humans as it is. Like every human is kind of like a neuron. And if you put them all together, they're kind of like working together to sometimes not working together, but for the most part, like humans collectively are like a brain, which is like a bunch of neurons.
Yeah. So, I'm, do you actually agree and believe that what Elon is saying, that, you know, we have seen the hyperspeed growth of AI, we're watching it just incredibly perform more than we all ever thought that AI can do. And right now it's ChatGPT, but we are seeing even vision and photos. You can actually now just type in a sentence or say a word, and then this new app will just create videos, and it can generate, you know, really realistic photos and videos. Now you can't even tell the difference between reality, but is this the way to beat that? If AI becomes, you know, conscious and it becomes so super powerful, can us connecting to AI be our only hope to actually be either at par with it or beat it? Or is it too late? What's your thinking on this?
I don't think it's too late. I'm like naturally extremely optimistic, so that's my bias. But I don't think it's too late. I also didn't think that Elon was correct that AI will be smarter than humans in every way. Now I realize that I was wrong. I no longer think what I thought before, and a lot of it is because of the recent advancements. But then also, what Jack Ma was saying with his interview with Elon, and he was saying like, oh, he's not concerned because humans will find creative ways to deal with AI. I think he was actually right. Like in a large part, the ironic thing is it's because of the person that he's talking to. Like Elon and others will find ways where we're able to deal with AI in a way that doesn't put us in a ton of harm. Like, you know, there's one question of like, does AI itself pose a big threat to humanity? Or does certain parts of humanity equipped with AI present a bigger danger to humanity? I think like that's way more of a serious threat. Can you remind me what the last part that you asked?
Yeah, I mean, just right. Yeah, what's going to happen? Are we going to be able to beat AI? That's, you know, well, let me ask another question, which is, you know, the whole concept of we're seeing the progress of AI dramatically go out there. And I was just asking you whether or not you think that we could actually compete with AI or beat it. And the promise of AI, and I'm optimistic too, was this idea that, well, AI is going to take over and a lot of people will lose their jobs. But this will allow humans to spend more time doing creative things. And, you know, the argument was in the olden days, you used to like do backbreaking work, you know, seeding the farms. Now you don't need that because we've got technology. Well, you then just became more, white collar worker. You found different jobs. Now, if AI takes over, you're going to be able to be much more creative. My thing, though, is that AI is more creative than we are. I mean, have you seen the poems? Have you seen the music that it creates? It's pretty friggin' amazing. So if it takes over both, you know, intelligence and creativity, what are we going to do? And I want to ask you back, because your startup, Returns, is helping retirees be able to consult and find jobs and keep themselves kind of occupied and be able to consult, and you make it easy for them to do that. And I think it's poetic, right? Because that return, that company you're creating, is going to be more in need as humans are losing their jobs, but they need something to do. So I'm just curious what's going to happen to society. And I'm a positive, optimistic person like you are. I'm now questioning at this point. I'm getting worried at this point.
I see. Yeah, I mean, I definitely think like as it is today, whether or not AI replaces like a ton of jobs, I think there's an issue with retirement. Like the concept of traditional retirement, if you told like any 18-year-old today that you're going to continue going to school for another 5 years, and then you're going to work for a 45-year block of your life, and then you're going to have fun and retire for another 20, 25 years.
Right.
Like telling any 18-year-old that template for their life, they think like that's absurd. And more, like that's kind of the case for anybody from the age of like 18 to 60. Because they realize when they're 60, many people, when they're 60, they realize like they're going to live till they're probably 90, and in many cases be very capable until they're 80. And 20 years is a super long time to do a lot of stuff, especially for those who had expertise in the thing that they worked in for 30 to 40 years. But you know, as AI progresses, it is kind of strange that there's a lot of creative stuff. Like you said, like those are the first things that have been replaced, like the image creation, artistry. Yeah. And then eventually, I think you mentioned this in the opening, like it's going to be video, right? Because if you take OpenAI's DALL-E or Midjourney and you basically pair that a bunch of times with motion with ChatGPT, all of a sudden, like you have the script, you have the automated voice, you have the visuals that you need for the video. And it's like all the elements and ingredients are there. It's coming really soon. So then it's like, do you need a YouTube video editor?
Nope. You don't need me. You could have a,
like, you know, certainly the best of the best are still going to be there, but the people who are novices, like I would consider you and I novice video editors.
Yes.
Like,
oh yeah. Yeah.
We're pretty good. Maybe better than like somebody who's never edited a video, but we're not super professionals. No. And AI will probably surpass us in that. And, you know, it'll just be, I think that there's still going to be a net increase in the number of jobs than the net decrease.
Okay.
And it's because, like, for example, with the advent of the computer, like there's just so much more opportunity for every new person to create something new and then need more people because of it. So it's like, let's say five of us are in a room, there's no such thing as a computer, and we have to like create a company together. Okay, we'll create the company and we'll work on some mission and it'll take 50 years. But now all of a sudden, if you have five of us in a room and we all have computers, we could each have our own ideas for companies to create. And then we're like, we have customers all around the world and we can't service all of them individually by ourselves, but we have five companies. So we need to hire more people. And I think with AI, it's only going to amplify that. Like simultaneously, people are living longer and longer and the birth rate, it continues to decline. So it's like you have two factors that are decreasing the number of people available in the workforce. Like the people that are living longer and longer are retiring earlier and earlier, and the people that are being born are not enough volume to replace those that are exiting. And all like there's an increase in number of companies. So it's like, you know, if I went to school and then I did my 9-to-5 job, I would be part of the traditional workforce, but I chose not to. And now that I'm doing my own YouTube channel, like who am I going to hire if I want the first three employees to help with my YouTube channel? It's going to be three people that I went to school with. So all of a sudden, like they're out of the traditional workforce as well. And then like, that's the same thing that's happening on a bigger scale with people like Mr. Beast and all the other biggest creators. Same thing with OnlyFans creators, same thing with Patreon creators, people who make it big on Twitter, people who made a ton of money on Bitcoin. Like they're not working their traditional 9-to-5 anymore. They're same with the stock market. If they made it big in the stock market, they're out of the 9-to-5 permanently, and they may eventually do work, but it's going to be their own work. And when they do their own work, they're going to find people that were in their former 9-to-5 job.
The world is changing. And So how did you get into Neuralink? I mean, like I said, you are, I think, the de facto kind of like media source for keeping track of Neuralink. You've done such a great job with Neuropod, your YouTube channel. How did you get started? What made you get interested in this space? Because I didn't see that your background was anything to do with medical per se, unless I was wrong. You're an engineer.
Yeah, you're correct. Yeah, I studied civil engineering. I guess through the internships at Tesla, I realized how special Elon is and how special the teams at Tesla are. And I had been watching and listening and watching Rob Mauer do his Tesla Daily podcast. And I thought like, oh, Rob, it would be awesome if you do like a Neuralink monthly podcast. Like you just have a special episode about Neuralink every month. I think at the time I told him quarterly, and it was just like, I should do this because I'm more motivated by what Neuralink is doing than what Tesla is doing. And nobody is doing this right now. Mm-hmm. And I can do that once every quarter. And eventually, hopefully it will be once every month and once every 2 weeks and once every week. And then, I mean, maybe 10 years down the road, they are releasing more frequent updates and it requires as much work as Rob puts into Tesla Daily. But
No doubt. I mean, yeah, your YouTube channel's taken off though. I mean, you've got, but some many videos that are 250,000, 300,000 views. You know, people are interested in this space. Is there any benefit for Tesla? And then maybe talk about even SpaceX and going to Mars. Can you think of any reason why Neuralink might be useful for those?
Yeah. So the most the thing that I'm most excited for with regards to Neuralink and Tesla that's not medical related is the synergy between Neuralink and TeslaBot. So
okay.
Like I have this longer term idea for what Neuralink could eventually do. And it's quite similar in concept to what Tesla does for full self-driving. Basically with full self-driving and autopilot, like Tesla is doing their best to essentially take like the artificial, the driver portion of every human and put that driver piece of the brain, use that to train like Tesla's artificial driver. Like Tesla's recreating an artificial driver, but that artificial driver is a supercomputer that has little bits of training from everybody's driver brain, you know? Mm-hmm. And then they're optimizing that. And then eventually they're going to have an artificial driver that's so significantly better than any individual driver could do. In the case of Neuralink, like you basically have the same thing where you could have a fleet of Neuralink implants. Let's say you have a Neuralink implant in a million people, and you're getting the data and information of these electrodes in a specific area of the brain, and you could train to have an artificial brain that's way better than the collective of everybody together. And then all of a sudden, like, you have this artificial brain that you can pair with TeslaBot. You know, so it's like TeslaBot right now is kind of like trying to sense and perceive the outside world and gather information to then react on it. But with the Neuralink one, it would be like the inverse. It would be like you literally know what's happening, and then you pair it with sensors to perceive what the outside world is, and you're able to really quickly and truly understand what's going on at a deeper level. So that's, man, I can't wait till that happens. Like that'll be, I mean, that's just like such a futuristic, crazy.
Yeah. Concept. You just scared the crap out of me all over again. Cause like at one point I kind of started believing that humans will control AI. Now, when you just talked about that, I think that is AI. We are now, you know, that's a super computer is going to become smarter than all humans. It already is on its own, but then if it combines all the knowledge that every human has, controlling bots, then why not just send a bot to Mars? Eventually you don't need humans. Puny little brains. Doesn't work fast. I'm now depressed.
You know, everything that you said is super, is exactly accurate for what's happening with Tesla's full self-driving. Right? Like, true. It's safer true. Than we can drive on average. Eventually, it's going to be way better than I could drive individually. It's better mm-hmm. than you could drive individually. And it's because it's training off of all these other people to get way more data and experience than we could ever get in our single lifetime. And so with the brain concept, like I think the first coolest thing that's going to happen, if my whole like concept of the fleet and all that pans yeah. out, will be like better identifying what's occurring in the brain and how to diagnose different illnesses. So like, for example, if we don't, like right now, if we don't exactly know what's happening in the brain immediately before somebody has a seizure, then, but you have like a million Neuralink implants and five of them have a seizure, then you have the data for exactly what happened. And if they're all the same and you can correlate that to one another, then you can very quickly know like what's happening in somebody's brain and what the pattern is and recognize to be able to say like, hey, it looks like John is about to have a seizure because this has happened before. And that'll be cool to have.
Yeah. But you know, so we're talking about the fragile biological brain. Why not just take the knowledge and upload into a computer? I never was one to believe in that concept, that you can have a self, a conscious being uploaded to a computer. But now, after listening to you the whole hour, I'm getting worried that that's actually possible. We're going to be living in a computer. Why stay in the brain with all that, you know, conditions and stroke and issues that you just talked about? Upload that information to a computer. Is that possible? I think it might be based on everything you just said today.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be possible. I mean,
oh crap.
Conceptually, it's like, I think there's a lot of parallels to like gene editing as well. Yes. It's yeah. like, you know, with Neuralink, like it's weird because it's like they're so dissimilar, but just conceptually, I think there's some parallels where it's like, if you can map exactly what somebody's genetics are, and you can just literally like edit out a specific part of that gene that's faulty, then that's hugely valuable to that person and everybody down the road, assuming no side effects, you know, which is a big if, but assuming that that's the case, then that's a huge game changer. And the same is true with Neuralink. Like if there's a specific faulty neuron and you can replace it, de facto replace it, that's a huge game changer for that person.
Okay. I'm going to choose to believe you that it's a positive future. It's the only way to survive these days. Is Elon spending a lot of time at Neuralink? Do you know how they're managing that company? I mean, the big complaint right now is Elon is running many, many companies. He's focused on Twitter right now, SpaceX and Tesla. But Elon does appear that Neuralink is making progress, continuing to move forward. There was a bunch of discussion about the fact that there's so much turmoil within Neuralink that it almost maybe even went backwards and so forth. Is that all false? Is he involved? What do you know about that?
He spends less time on Neuralink than Twitter right now. He spends less time on Neuralink than Tesla, spends less time than at SpaceX. I think he spends more time at Neuralink than Boring Company by a small margin. Mm-hmm. But he has still influence at the company. Like I know, like a lot of people still like respect and thinks that he's really controlling. So it's like, you know, that's kind of double-edged. Like they respect him, but at the same time, like he wants progress extremely quickly. So yeah, I mean, I think down the road as time progresses, like I suspect that he's going to transition a lot of his time away from Tesla to eventually spend more time on Neuralink.
Okay.
Like let's say Tesla gets to a level of self-driving that's like 100 times better than an average human driver. Mm-hmm. And TeslaBot has, I don't know, mm-hmm. TeslaBot is functional. Mm-hmm. And let's say Starship is up and running. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, how could he not be spending more time on Neuralink?
No. Yeah, it makes sense. Okay, does Elon have a Neuralink connection today? Some people are just joking that that's the case.
No, yeah, no, there's actually a lot of people, you know, like my audience is super polarized. Like some people are very supportive of what Neuralink is doing and they want their immediate friends or family to be able to get one. Mm-hmm. Which by the way, they could sign up for mm-hmm. the patient registry and at least log their information into Neuralink's system by going mm-hmm. to Neuralink's homepage and then clicking the patient registry. But then there's also a lot of other people who are super skeptical and think that they will never get one. And that's fine. Like, hopefully it will be the case that this is never forced upon anybody. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, at some point there becomes a time where it's quite similar to what's happening right now with cell phones. Like, nobody's ever been forced to get a cell phone, but if you don't get one, it's kind of difficult to keep up the pace with those who have it. So I think that'll probably be similar with Neuralink. I hope I answered the question.
Yeah, I mean, so you did not deny that Elon does not have a Neuralink right now, right?
No, no way. He does not have one.
Okay. And are you, because of your interest in Neuralink, that you know your focus, you're just so excited about this, would you be somebody that's very open? Everything you've seen, safety, not this year, but maybe in a decade, would you be one of the first people or one of the people eventually? Where would you fall?
Assuming everybody who wanted one for medical usage had one, mm-hmm. I would be very willing very quickly and early.
Really? Okay.
Like, I guess my personality is naturally like, I'm willing to, kind of like be the tester for a lot of stuff. I mean, particularly for medical purposes, like, I'm not like super interested in technology per se. Like, I've never been one to buy a bunch of different gizmos and gadgets, but it's like, just purely safety and security wise, I trust that they're the best possible team to get it to that point.
Okay. Well, this is very, very exciting. And then would you ever go to Mars? Is that also something you would, you're good friends with Ellie in space, and she's a friend of mine as well. Would you ever go to Mars yourself? And yeah.
I'm not personally as inspired or motivated by space exploration as others. So I'd probably want to like kind of reserve my seat for others if they're interested in that. I wouldn't like say 100% no. I think it would be cool to, explore, similar to like how people explore other countries today. But I probably wouldn't be the first.
Okay. I do hope that it's a good future. So while we are concerned about AI taking over humanity, and I see tremendous benefits with Neuralink to help solve medical issues, and then even just giving us superpowers, this idea that we could actually control AI is I thought that was the main reason he was doing this, but now you've given me some further thinking about how this could go all haywire eventually. It's going to happen regardless what we say. It is the future. Our humans need to be open to change. And I need to think about what my future is going to be in this world. So appreciate you thought-provoking. We didn't even need Neuralink for us to have an exciting conversation. Thank you so much, Ryan. I appreciate it. Everybody, you've got to check out his YouTube channel. It's called Neuropod. Very successful. It's really good information about Neuralink. And he's got a Twitter handle as well at RyanTanaka3. Check him out there. And thank you again, Ryan. Appreciate this. This was thought-provoking. We got lots more to talk about. I still got some more questions. We didn't quite cover everything, but thank you.
Awesome. Yeah, very much appreciate you having me on. And thank you for asking great questions.
Thank you. Okay. Well, next time, like I said, I just have to think it. And you already know the question. I wouldn't even have to ask you. I'd already know the answers.
Yeah.
Hopefully, everybody, you felt like you got a little bit brighter. Please send us a comment. Send me a like and subscribe. Appreciate it. Thank you, everybody.